This is Talking of Books with Isabel Abuhul, John McDonald, and the rest of the team.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Welcome back to the show. Quick recap on the questions. John Ronson, is he coming to the LitFest this year? Or, well, next year, 2017, in March 2017. And then the second question, Orhan Pamuk's book, where is it actually set? I think we've probably given it away 15, 20 times already, so you should be able to pick up on the rather broad hints that we've given over the last half an hour or so.
So just SMS us on 4001.
Perfect. So, Penny, just to wrap up then on those two books that we've been reviewing.
Well, I've read both of them. I love them both. And it's horrible to have to choose between the two, so I won't. But I can tell you very definitely that if you enjoyed A Strangers in My Mind, you will love Broken Mirrors, Cynical, and vice versa. So if you're a fan of Elias Kuhuri, you will enjoy Orhan Pamuk's book. And if you're a fan of Orhan Pamuk, have a read of Broken Mirrors. Both of them are beautifully translated. If they're in your mother tongue, obviously read them rather in that one. I can't recommend them more highly. Neither of them are fast reads. These are books that need a little bit of your attention, but relax, sit back, and enjoy the beautiful language that they are presented in. I think that's what I can tell you about those two. I think we need to move on quite swiftly onto one of our next books, and I don't think any of us here have actually read this one. This came in at number two,
joint second.
Joint second, The North Water, which neither of us have read, I don't think. I like the idea of it. It's the kind of book that I would probably read. I don't know. Aidan, what do you reckon? Would you read this one?
I'm sure to give it a go, yeah.
Yeah? I like the fact that it's sort of going up into the Arctic Circle. I understand that it's quite violent, that it's terribly bloody.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar. I think the problem with anything involving whales is there is the inevitable comparison to Moby Dick. So, you know, I think when Ian McGuire was setting out to write this, you think to yourself, should I write a book about whales, actually? Because you know what's coming, and I think the other issue is that it's a journey to darkness. So what you also have got is the Joseph Conrad comparisons as well. Not so much Heart of Darkness, more Lord Jim, it seems, according to the according to the reviewers. But, I mean, it's a book that's done phenomenally well. I know the people, you know, the reviewers here on the show who've read it have rated it very, very highly indeed. I think many people had it down as a Booker favorite at one stage. I think it was on the long list but didn't make it to the short list.
That's right.
And that was actually a major surprise at the time. Because I know that Mr. Rob Mitchell, the Booker prize picker of choice over the last sort of 5 or 6 years or so, I know that Rob had it down early doors as a major Booker contender. So a bit of a surprise to Ian McGuire, I think, and his publisher that they didn't make it to the short list.
But you know what, I think it's quite possible that because the book has been compared to so many other authors, and one of the things that you get about that seems to happen with the Booker is that the books that win tend to be very original. Mm. So when your book is compared to three or four other authors, I think that it doesn't make
it
take
away from the
book.
I think that's a very good point, Penny. I think you need to be offering some consultancy to authors and publishers on this issue.
Yeah, but I've never guessed them right.
I would agree with you on that. I think that the problem with this book, I mean, from all accounts, as I say, it's a phenomenally well-written book. It's not for the faint of heart. There are some scenes in it that are quite stomach-churning, I believe. The characters, the main character, Henry Drax, who's the harpooner and the volunteer, is an incredibly nasty piece of work, which you discover in the first 13 pages or so of the book. He runs through a gamut of crimes that are quite shocking. So you mean you get the picture early on as to what you've signed up for with this book. You have another character, Patrick Sumner, as the ex-army surgeon with a shattered reputation, no money, no better option than to sail as the ship's medic. You've got the contingent of characters who are coming from all different directions, all different experiences. And then you have a discovery of something evil. So it's got, you know, it's got those characters on a journey, evil
on a ship that you can't get off of.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, aliens, all of that sort of stuff, similar type of themes. You get the picture. So it's and as I say, certainly the people who've read this book have campaigned vigorously. I know, you know, they were very taken with it and said that it is a phenomenally well-written piece of literature.
I listened to the sample for the audiobook, mm-hmm. and I'm definitely going to be listening to this one. It was really, really good.
Yeah.
I like the pace of it, and I like the length of the book. So for me, this is a really good option for an audiobook listen, which I think I will do. So for those of you who like to listen to your books while you're driving, this one looks like it would be a good one.
Yeah, but beware of the gory bits as well. So I don't know if that upsets your driving. be careful in that score. Get ready for the pause button.
Can we go on to a book that I think we both really enjoyed?
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about The Sellout?
Yes, The Sellout is in joint second place. The Sellout won the Booker Prize. Was, I think, a so-called surprise winner of the Booker, but it wasn't for me because I guessed it at the time. And I think that, I mean, what was interesting about the Booker list this year, and I made the point when we were on the program, I mean, I read three of the books on the list. What was most surprising for me was that it was the most enjoyable set of books that I've read on any of the lists over the previous sort of 7 or 8 years, and the three books that I read were enjoyable in their own way, in completely different ways. The Sellout has been described as satirical. The author himself, Paul Beattie, has to a degree rejected that. Seems to be the way with authors: give a thing a label, and they'll kick it back at you.
He doesn't think it's satire. I thought it was bitingly satirical.
Yes, I mean, I think that he, you know, he, to me it was completely satirical. And you know, you have this this character who was brought up by a sociologist dad who used to do experiments on him. He lives in this area of Los Angeles, this agrarian area. Which ceases to exist on the map. He tries to bring it back onto the map. He, by default, takes on a slave. He then tries to reintroduce segregation into a school. There are a cast of additional characters who are incredibly colorful, incredibly lively. The book, I found, I've got to say, you know, the first 100 pages, it's quite relentless. I mean, it is coming. It's like, I think I said at the time, it's like a Richard Pryor monologue. You know, you have got that relentlessness coming at you. But what I did find...
It's brilliant lines.
Yeah.
You know, I was sitting there going, I've got to remember this. And you just have to stop. Eventually, you just have to say no. Just enjoy the double entendres. Enjoy the playing that he does with the English language so beautifully in these little 3 or 4 word sentences, which are so precise and cutting and clever. And he just keeps doing it and keeps doing it. And I must admit, you start thinking, okay, how much more can you take? How can you keep it up? But he doesn't need to. It's almost as though that sets the scene, you know, for the unfolding of the story, which comes at a completely different pace, I think, after that.
Yeah, again, yeah, the first 100 pages is pretty relentless. But, I mean, you know, as you said, Penny, I mean, I found it laugh out loud funny. I actually was laughing out loud when I was reading this book. And I did it did hurt the sides of, you know, so I did actually feel physically
because he gets himself into situations fairly often. I think that a lot of the, for me, a lot of the humor came from a completely unexpected place, because there is satire, there is irony, and he find the whole business with the slave, I mean, that was just ridiculous, wasn't it? And I mean, how he found himself in that position. You just have to laugh at the relationships that he finds himself in. And it's his reaction to his life that is funny. The characters that he has in his life, they keep throwing these weird things at him. And it's those situations that are funny. The actual, his life itself is tragic. You know, the lives of the people in that neighborhood. It's like they're stuck somewhere, and their sense of identity is completely lost. They, as you say, the neighborhood suddenly ceases to exist. It's not even on the map anymore. And his fight to get that back is almost taking over his father's mantle, you know, something that he never really wanted to do.
Yes, I mean, his father was engaged in helping people who were in who were potentially suicidal, and he would go and talk them down from these situations, and he had a wonderful way of doing this. He had a fantastic voice and could do this. And then the son had a very quiet voice, so our lead character in the book had a very quiet voice, so they had to give him a bullhorn to do his whispering. And he said, "Have you ever whispered using a bullhorn?" You know, and you get these sorts of situations that are just, you know, I mean, they're brilliantly comic. It's just really, really funny. You know, you have the hominy character. You've got, you know, you've got this guy who used to appear in movies, I mean, it is, let's just say, it's very, very politically incorrect in terms of how it approaches things. But you can tell, I mean, Paul Beatty is very angry with a lot of the establishment that he's grown up with and the accepted institutions within the black community in the States, and effectively how he feels they have let the black community down, and that he believes that they are ripe for attack, and he goes after them with the, you know, one of the most precise weapons available, which is satire. You know, he makes fun of them. And you could imagine, you know, there are certain characters in here. I mean, what I've seen is, since I've read the book and you're watching the television and certain people come on making political statements, you go, ah, right, okay, I see where he could fit in within the sellout, you know?
You can definitely see that.
So I just found it an absolutely terrific book. I mean, it was interesting when we were doing the book review, you know, Mark Lemon, who was here, Mark didn't like it. He really didn't like it. And I think it's not for everybody, because it's interesting, because I've actually recommended all three of the books that I read on the Booker Prize to a variety of people, and the one that most people have had problems with is The Sellout.
Funny that. I've loved it. I loved it. Can't sing its praises enough. We have to take another short break. You're listening to Talking of Books, and we'll be back with you in just a few minutes.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And welcome back to Talking of Books. You're in the studio with Penny McKenzie, James Mullen, and Aidan. Aidan, I've gone blank and forgotten that you're a lake. We've just sort of wrapping up talking about The Sellout, which I think both James and I will highly recommend to you. If you're a sensitive reader, then maybe this is not for you. But it's really great as a social comment, ironical satire with brilliant English and amazing use of the language. I'm going to give you a quick reminder of our questions so far. First question for the first hour was, is John Ronson going to attend the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature in 2017? Our second question is, what city is the book A Strangeness in My Mind set? What city is A Strangeness in My Mind set? And our third question is going to be, what prize has The Sellout by Paul Beatty just recently won? What literary prize has The Sellout by Paul Beatty just recently won? And I think we can go straight into our sort of favourite book of the year?
Our winner, and a winner by quite a margin, actually.
I believe so.
I believe it was. It received twice as many number one votes as any of the other books on the list. And again, it's another Booker Prize book, His Bloody Project by Graham McRae Burnett. And again, a bit of a surprise for this, particularly on Graham's behalf. I mean, he was surprised that it made it to the long list. He was very surprised it made it to the short list. And at one stage, he was in the running, I think, certainly in terms of how the bookmakers, whatever we're looking at, they thought that this might win it. And the reason for that is that it has it is by far the most popular book on the Booker Prize list. The sales of this book are way ahead of any of the other people on the Booker Prize list.
Now here's the thing, because when we got the list of the 20, is it 20 long list?
13 long list.
How many?
13
is
on the long.
13
and then 6 on the short.
Yeah, so when we got that list and I looked at all the books and I looked at the blurbs about each one, mm-hmm. this is the one that attracted my attention.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's not based on anything other than just grabbing your attention on a few lines that the publisher has put out about that book. So I have to ask, I wonder how important that is when you choose a book, what's on the back of the book, how the publisher presents it to you before you'll even open up and read a book.
Well, yes. I mean, we need to get Isabel started on that. That's one of her favorite topics in terms of the design, how the book looks, and also how you know, what the blurb is on the back as well. I mean, I think it is, you know, as a browser of books, when you go into a bookstore, these things are important. But I think one of the things where this seems to have grown really well is in terms of word of mouth. So the word of mouth on this particular book has been phenomenal. You know, it comes from, it's quite a small publishing house, isn't it, Aidan, the book comes from. So it's, you know, although I think this is their second year in a row that they've actually won the Booker Prize, this publishing house, because they had a Brief History of Seven Killings.
Oh, was that theirs?
Yes, which came from them as well. So they're on a bit of a roll. But it's really, what is the book about? It's a brutal triple murder in a remote Scottish farming community in 1869. Which leads to the arrest of 17-year-old Roderick McRae. It's interesting because there's no question that he actually committed the act. So it's not a whodunit. Mm. It's really a why done it. That's really what the book is about.
Although having said that, and maybe I didn't read it.
Well, don't give away too much.
I'm not going to give away too much. But even when you know that at the beginning of the book, I kept hoping that maybe something else was going to transpire through the narration of the, you know, the way this the book is written, with the diary and the various interviews. I kept thinking, okay, so this is what they've said has happened in the beginning, but maybe it'll unravel.
Yeah, well, I think the tension in the book comes really in the trial, where there is a defence. So there is a defence of insanity, and as the reader, you're rooting for Roddy McRae, the 17-year-old. You're hoping that perhaps that could come through, despite the fact that he has committed the most appalling acts. I mean, they really are. I mean, it's pretty gruesome murders. But the background, I think the brilliance of this story, because it's based on a so-called sort of collection of documents which are discovered by the author.
We need to remember,
yeah.
They are fictionally based on.
Yes.
It's not a fiction about a fact. It's a fiction about a fiction.
Yeah, and this caused confusion on the old Booker Prize panel, because when we were reviewing it, Rob Mitchell thought it was real. And in fact,
but isn't that the magic of it? Yeah.
I knew nothing about this book when I started reading it. I started reading it, and I was about 30 pages in. I'm going, well, how could this be on the Booker Prize? This is like a collection of documents. And then I had to go back and go, ah, right, it's actually a made-up story. I mean, he does tell you, to his credit at the beginning, he does say in the title page, a novel. So, you should take it from there. But it's so convincing, these documents, that you believe they're real. And it's a wonderfully woven story. It's really, really clever. It's a really easy read. But it's a tremendously well story, and I've no, I mean, I completely understand why it has taken this, you know, this great laudit of being the, you know, Talking of Books number one book for 2016, and I very much look forward to reading, you know, more work by Graham McRae Burnett. And I believe we may even be speaking to him, Penny, at some stage.
I certainly hope we're speaking to him later on, yeah. In a few minutes, actually. Aidan, what did you think?
Well, I was completely blown away by it. Yeah, I was impressed. I didn't know much what to expect of it. I was talking to Isabel, and she said, "You have to read this book."
And when your boss tells you that, yeah.
Not for work. This is purely a word of mouth recommendation. Yeah. I downloaded it later that day, started reading it. I did pick up that it was a novel, both from what Isabel said and from what it said on the cover, but otherwise I really knew nothing about it. I didn't know that there were going to be the additional documents at the end of it. I didn't know the first thing about it, really. And it completely sucked me in. And yeah, I do like the notes, all the different court transcripts and everything at the end. It really comes across some of the 19th century prejudices of the academics and legal people who are studying the case and trying to make sense of him. I'm familiar with some of those theories from prior reading. They're not nice, and it means that no one's coming at it at all from a neutral point of view. No one really has the defendant's interests at heart, because they're all trying to prove their own points of view. I'm trying to talk around any actual plot spoilers, so sorry if this sounds vague.
And
just kept me going right until the final page.
I mean, it's interesting just looking at John Ronson's book, the one about shame, and what's really telling actually about this particular book is that is one of the key issues here around it, is the development of that, the bullying. You have this sort of feudal crofting society, and this Roddy McRae, who's the character here, and his family are subject to a series of humiliations, and you can see this. You can see how this would build up, and how this would cause him. You know, the humiliation of his father in particular would cause him to grow in anger, and then to lead to this act. So it's interesting that we've got John Ronson talking about this issue online, but here we are in 19th century Scotland dealing with exactly the same issue, a criminal act. Which was led to by the issue of shame.
Yeah, and then but there's also a strong link in terms of a community that is has disempowered, struggling to survive, and at the mercy, if you like, of people with more power than them. That happens in the sellout.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, common themes about the abuse of power. And you know what people will do when they're put into these particular situations, but it's interesting. I mean, the way in which this whole story is woven is it's very, very clever indeed.
And it is.
And again, the versions of the story that are revealed, so it's not quite as simple as you think it looks initially. The story changes, and you think, "Oh, right. Oh, I see. Oh, it could be there. Oh, that could have happened." So it's again people's perception of what happened at a particular time.
And we're going to have to come back to people's perceptions after the break. But before we go to the break, I want to do a very quick rundown of the quiz questions. And this is your last chance to win a LitFest author. So our first quiz question was: is John Ronson going to be coming to the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature 2017? Our second question is, what city is the book A Strangeness in My Mind set? And our third question is which notable prize did the sellout win this year? Come back to us on 4001 and we'll join you after the break.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And welcome back to Talking of Books. You're joined by me, Penny McKenzie, my co-host, James Mullen, and our sort of guest reviewer in the studio, my colleague, Aidan Lake. We have just been discussing our sort of runaway winner for this year in the Talking of Books show. We've all voted, and I think this book, his buddy Project, came in, what did we say, double the amount of votes than anybody else?
Double the votes that the next group got, yeah.
And with that, we're really very lucky, because not only have we got our favourite book that we've been able to talk about, but we've also got the author who's going to be able to speak to us about the book. We've got Graham McRae Burnett on the line. Hello, Graham. How are you?
I'm very well, Penny. It's great to hear that you've enjoyed the book so much.
Yeah, it's been a runaway favourite, but we don't normally have quite such a big margin between our sort of first and second options. So it's wonderful to have you online and be able to talk to you about that.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great to be on the show. Thank you.
This must have been a mammoth project for you. It's an amazingly written book. It defies the sort of genre that you'd want to put it in, which would normally be crime, because you know that it is a crime when it first happens. And when you're reading it, you kind of think that it's fact, not fiction. It's almost historical.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I did sort of 3 or 4 months of historical research before I started writing the book. I mean, the whole thing took me maybe 2.5 years to write. But I mean, you know, you've got to be careful with your research so that it doesn't overwhelm the story you're trying to tell. Which I think, you know, if your readers over there have responded to the book, I think what people respond to in any novel is really the characters in the book, and you know, you've got to bring those to life. And sometimes if you overwhelm things too much with historical detail, you can lose the kind of heart of the book, which I think is the sort of the relationships and the thought processes of the characters.
I do think, though, that you have brought the community beautifully to life in the way you've written. You can feel the atmosphere of that little town and the community, and you can... It's very rural, and it's gritty. You can feel that. So I think that it's not just the characters that you've brought to life, it's the whole community.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you know the background. My mother comes from Westeros, which is the part of the country where the book's set. And the book's set, as you say, in a very small crofting community, a farming community in the 19th century. And so, I mean, I've been travelling to that part of the world all my life. So, I mean, I know the geography and the landscapes of these places really, really well. And I suppose over the years you kind of pick up a bit of the sort of folklore of the place, and also the kind of way that people think up there, which is a little bit different. I live in Glasgow in the central belt of Scotland. It's quite industrial. And, you know, people have a slightly different mentality up there. I think the sort of religion and religious ways of thinking even now play a sort of larger part in people's mentality than they do down here, and the way people sort of, you know, down in Glasgow, if you're, you know, with your friends or whatever, people tend to kind of banter with each other and discuss, you know, what's going on in the world.
So they're a little bit more mature.
Down here?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, people here are quite lively. I don't know if I'd describe it as doer, but, you know, up there there's still that sort of storytelling tradition. People like to sit around and tell each other stories, and that, you know, that there's still that sort of oral tradition, I think, which you don't find so much down here. But, yeah, I mean, just, you know, going back to your question, yeah, it's really important to bring the community to life, and the fact that the characters inhabit this very small place is quite claustrophobic, and they all live, you know, really cheek by jowl. So it's, you know, it's nice to hear that it does feel like a real place and not a sort of historical sort of museum piece.
Yeah, it's an interesting point about the book, Graham, is that from the very early stages, you know that Roddy has actually done the crime. I mean, there's no question about that. So it's not it's not really a who done it. It's more a a why done it.
And absolutely, yeah.
Why did you take that particular approach?
That's a good question. It's a tricky one to answer. I suppose, I mean, you know, when I start, I mean, the original idea for the book was this idea that a murderer would write a memoir of what he had done and the circumstances leading up to his crime. So we know he's in prison when he's writing the memoir. So we already know that in all likelihood that he's done something bad. But I suppose in my own reading, I'm not, when I read a crime novel, I'm never so much interested in the sort of revelation of what happened. I've always been more interested in books which examine the psychology of the criminal rather than the process of the detective might go through in his or her investigation. So I suppose it just reflects my own interest in examining why people do terrible things, you know, whether in fiction or in real life.
Yeah, I mean,
I suppose,
No, I was just saying that I saw there was an interview with you, and you referenced it was a serial killer, it was Dennis Nielsen, and the fact that when he was caught, he didn't attempt to say, no, I haven't done it. Well, not that he could have, actually, given what was happening in his house at the time. But he made no attempt to do it. So it's getting inside the mind of these people. And I know you're a big admirer of Georges Simenon as well.
Yeah, a huge admirer. I mean, Simenon's an interesting case because he wrote, he's best known for writing 75 Maigret books, Maigret being his detective character. And the Maigret books, in a way, are quite conventional detective novels in that there is a crime and Maigret investigates, and generally speaking, at the end of the book, we find out what happened. But he also wrote 120 other novels, which tend to, they're not even all crime novels, but they tend to focus on the perpetrator of a crime or somebody involved in a dramatic event, and it's really looking at, you know, what's the impact of that event on the character. So in his Bloody Project, you probably also read that I've often called it a novel about a crime rather than a crime novel. And I think what I mean by that is that, you know, here we have a dramatic event, you know, these violent murders, but it's really about the impact of these murders on the characters rather than on finding out, you know, as you say, who done it or something like that.
Do you know, it's been a long... Sorry,
I beg your pardon?
Carry on. I interrupt.
No, it's okay. That's, I'm probably... I mean, I could talk about Simenon for a long time, but, you know, Simenon's also... You know, he's just a very good writer. He's very economical in his prose and stuff, and I think when you're trying to learn your trade as a writer, as I still am, you know, he's a writer that's well worth reading from that point of view.
I just found that it's been a long time since I've read a book where I've wanted to actually really root for the bad guy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I kept hoping against hope that something would happen during the book that would show that Roddy hadn't committed those murders. Because you empathize and sympathize so much with him, the situation that community finds themselves in, the manipulations that they're subjected to. Were you, when you were writing, were you trying to get across a sense of the society that they were living in, that the injustices that were being done to them on a daily basis?
The interesting process of doing the research for me, as I said, you know, my family or my mother's side of the family comes from the Highlands of Scotland, and although I've been going up there, as I said, all my life, I didn't really know that much about the history of the area and the conditions that people lived under. I mean, this is only 150 years ago. And so the process of doing the research and uncovering the really terrible conditions that the Crofting people lived under, you know, it was quite an education for me. I didn't set out in using that material with a sort of didactic purpose in mind that I wanted to educate people about these conditions or expose these conditions, but they form a very important background to the murders. And I'm really glad that in using these as kind of motivation for the murders. You know, people have, like yourself, have said, you know, they've learned something about, as I did, about how people lived at that time and the lack of rights that they had under the sort of basically feudal regime where the crofters didn't own any land, so they were always in arrears in rent, so they were subject to basically the whims of the landowners, and you know, often in a little bit earlier, you know, just cleared from the land to make way for sheep, which is why there are Scottish people, you know, all over the world, because they were generally cleared from the Highlands and often travelled to, you know, America and Canada, which is why we've got places like Nova Scotia and Canada, New Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. One of the other books that features in the list, in our sort of top six list that we were discussing earlier, Graham, it was John Ronson's book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, where he looks at people, how people have been shamed in social media. And interestingly, he spoke to a psychiatrist in the States who talked about the fact that shame plays such a key role in crime. That is the damage of self-esteem, where people are shamed, that generally leads to violent crime. And it brought us to the discussion thinking about what happened to Roddy and how he was shamed and how his father was humiliated, how his family was shamed. And we just thought, you know, how important a role is that in the book as well? The fact that you can understand, any human being could understand why he was driven to do what he did because of the shame that was heaped upon him.
Yeah, I mean, well, I suppose I haven't thought about it in terms of shame, but, I mean, it goes back to what Penny was saying a moment ago about, you know, rooting for, I mean, she called him the bad guy, Roddy. I mean, when I wrote Roddy's section, Roddy's, as you know, Roddy's memoir is kind of the heart of the book. It's the largest section of the book. And I'm very much, you know, when I'm writing that, I'm really inside Roddy's head, or trying to get inside Roddy's head and see the world, the fictional world, from his point of view. So all these terrible things which happened to him and his family, which are humiliating, you know, is maybe the word I would use, to him, and which motivate him, at least in his own mind, to commit his murders. I mean, yeah, that feeling of humiliation, I think, is a very powerful motive for him. And I think, you know, as the reader, you also identify with the humiliations that are being heaped upon him, and that's kind of why I think you're rooting for Roddy, regardless of the sort of brutality of the things he does.
So the book's done phenomenally well, Graham. I mean, it obviously, yeah. I mean, it came as a bit of a surprise to you, but the word of mouth in this book, I mean, we've witnessed it ourselves here in Dubai through the word of mouth that we've spread here. I mean, I know, you know, of the books that I read on the Booker Prize, I enjoyed all three of them, but I've recommended all three of them, including your book. And the one that people consistently come back to me and say, oh, the one that I really enjoy is His Bloody Project. So the word of mouth in this book has been phenomenal, really, hasn't it?
I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, the book kind of started off, I mean, as I think everybody knows, you know, it's published by a small publisher here in Glasgow, Saraband, under their Contraband Crime imprint. And, you know, the book was kind of plodding along quite nicely. I mean, we'd sold the rights to in Germany and America before the Booker came along, but it wasn't selling, you know, a great deal of copies here in Britain. But yeah, as you say, I mean, it really took off after it was longlisted and shortlisted for the Booker Prize. I have to say, there does seem to be this sort of enthusiasm. I mean, I get messages every day from people, you know, who've read and enjoyed the book, and it has taken off in a way that, you know, not merely it's a really big deal to be on the Booker shortlist, of course, but you know, it has outsold all the other books, and people do seem to have responded to it in a way that, you know, they don't to every book. And that's just, it's just, as obviously as an author, you just want people to have the opportunity to read your book. So if it builds up this kind of momentum like that, it's you know, it's very, very gratifying. And you know, and when you are with a smaller publisher, which doesn't have a, you know, a large marketing budget, you know, obviously word of mouth is the best kind of marketing you can have.
I'm going to ask you a really difficult question. Why do you think why do you think that His Bloody Project has had this impact? What is it about the book, in your mind, as the author, that has grabbed the public's attention?
I mean, that is a tricky question, Penny. I mean, because, you know, you don't want to seem immodest about your own work. I mean, I think as a reader, I respond primarily to two things, which is feeling a sort of immersion in the world of the novel I'm reading, and a strong identification or relationship with the characters of the novel. And I think, as you've pointed to both these aspects in their conversation, I think people have found the world of the novel, which to most people is a very strange, you know, alien world. The book takes place in a historical period in a place that most people have never been to. But they respond to the character of Roddy, and he seems to take on some kind of life for everybody in the dilemma he finds himself in. People respond to. I mean, and you know what's most interesting to me. You know, I wrote the book with no eye whatsoever on commerciality. I wrote the book because this was a book that I wanted to write at that point. And now that the book is being published, you know, basically around the world, it's so interesting to hear people. You know, I did an interview with a Chinese journalist, and she told me that the situation that the characters are in the novel reminded her of the sort of oppressive atmosphere during the Cultural Revolution under Chairman Mao. So people find their own resonance.
It's the human condition, isn't it? The human condition is universal, and you are drawn to those characters when they are written in such a way that is honest and empathetic. I was very curious as to why you had decided to make Roddy 17 years old.
That's, you know, it's amazing. I was actually just thinking about that just yesterday, and it's funny because the thought I was having was, it was never a decision I made to make him 17 years old. I didn't think, will he be 15, 16, 18 or 19? He arrived to me as a 17-year-old. You know, so, and I think the thing about a 17-year-old is that you are on that cusp between childhood and, you know, adulthood. And in the book, Roddy has just finished. He's no longer going to school. He's trying to find his way in the world. He tries to get work. And that's actually the situation of a 17, 18-year-old, you know, probably quite around the world, you know what I mean? Transitioning. And, you know, he has, so in terms of his sort of work life, he's going through that transition. He's also going through that confusing period where he's first becoming interested in girls, and, you know, he has these, you know, romantic feelings towards, you know, a girl in the village and stuff. So I think it's just that period of in-betweenness, you know.
And it's interesting because when I picked up the book for the first time, Graham, I mean, it was given to me, and I got stuck into it straight away. And I didn't see your little warning at the beginning that this was a novel. So I was about 30 pages in, and I went, hang on a second, this is real documents. Why is this on the Booker list? And then obviously I had to go and find out it wasn't. It was actually, it was a novel. We even had confusion on our panel, one of our Booker panel. Yeah. He actually believed it was real. I mean, have you had that with other readers as well? People actually have bought into it? Yeah.
Yeah, I've had that. I mean, I've gone along to a few book groups to, you know, hear people discussing the book, which is always a really interesting experience as an author. And, yeah, there's been a lot of people who've taken the book to be, you know, a true crime book, and, you know, it's been reviewed as a true crime book, or reviews have said it's based on a true case, none of which is true. It's entirely fictional. And so, I mean, two things. I mean, one is I take it as a compliment that the writing of Roddy's memoir and the psychiatrist section appears to be so authentic that people think it's real. So that I take that as a compliment. Also, in terms of the way the book's set up, where I describe how I discovered the documents and archives and whatnot, and I describe what the documents look like, and I describe the reception of Roddy's memoir at the time in the 19th century with footnoted quotations and whatnot.
That was so cunning.
I know. I'm really interested in that sort of interplay between fiction and fact, and I haven't really thought through a sort of position, but all that kind of, I think of it as kind of playfulness.
It's wonderful.
And I'm into it. So, you know, just in terms of people thinking that it's real, I think I've only got myself to blame. And that is why, as James alluded to on the title page of the book, it says a novel. And that's my way of saying, you know, I want you to understand this is fiction. And I am pointing out clearly that it is a novel. Unfortunately, of course, a lot of novels have the words a novel on the title page. It's usually entirely redundant because it's completely obvious that it's a novel. But it was kind of my get-out clause because I thought that the book and the way it was written might cause some confusion. But I wasn't out to kind of fool anybody. I want people to understand it as a fiction.
I think it added to the whole enjoyment of the read, the fact that it was that it took you right into that whole story and place, and could it be real? And because it just feels that way, and that's what you want when you read something. You want it to feel absolutely real, don't you? And you've done that.
I know.
So,
I mean,
you know, you've ticked that box amazingly.
I mean, it's one of the things that it's just a very interesting thing that we do when we read a novel. We open a book and we know that it's not true and it's all been made up. And yet, in order for us to enjoy a novel, we want to invest in that world. We want to believe it's real. And the more real the novel and the characters and the setting seem, the more we enjoy it as a novel. We want to forget that it's fiction. You know, if you've ever cried over the plight of a character in a novel, I think you can only do that if you, in the classic phrase, suspend your disbelief.
Well, I wanted to take Roddy home, and I wanted to break him out of prison, and I just thought that the whole world was just cruel and awful.
I know. I mean, and that reflects the reality of the time. It was cruel and awful, and you know, all the incidents in the book, you know, the things that happened to Roddy, such as being, you know, he and his father, they're gathering the seaweed from the shore, and they're told to put it back. You know, they're based on actual regulations that, you know, may or may not have been enforced, you know, in parts of the Highlands at that time. So, you know, it is as we were mentioning earlier, it's nice that people are can learn something from the book about how people lived at the time.
Well, I think our listeners in Dubai and our readers in Dubai have absolutely embraced this book. We have all, certainly at the Literature Foundation, we have just loved it. Everybody's been talking about it. Everybody's enjoyed reading it. We're really honoured that you've been able to speak to us. It just gives us a lovely opportunity to get to know a little bit more about you and about the book.
Well, it's been great to be on the programme. I mean, you know, it's just a delight to hear that, you know, people in Dubai are responding to, you know, a book about the Highlands of Scotland in the 19th century. That's a really, really fantastic thing for me. So, brilliant.
We just need to get you here, Graham. We need to
We need to get you to the festival.
I'm in Australia during your festival.
Oh, that's crushing.
Yeah, I know, sorry. I've been, thanks to the Booker Prize, I've been receiving quite a lot of invitations to places around the world, so I've got quite a busy year ahead, which is very nice, and I have to write another novel, so
which we're looking forward to, we really are. And we'd just like to thank you so much from everybody in the studio. We've been enjoying our time with you, and we certainly hope that we'll get something more from you in terms of another novel quite soon.
Okie dokie. Right, well, thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, right, bye-bye.
And that was the author of our favourite book of the year, His Bloody Project, by Graham McRae Burnett. I don't know about you guys, but I thought that was rather insightful. We got a little bit of insight into the way he wrote the book and why he wrote it.
Yeah, I mean, very, very well thought through. I think, you know, he's been clearly sort of taken aback, if you like, by the success of the book. but identified really what it was about the book that stood out for all of us and other readers is the fact that you are enveloped in this world. You have this character, you develop sympathy, empathy for this character who has done horrendous acts, and yet you want things to turn out differently for him. That's the tension, if you like, in the book, in the court scene. It's the weaving of the various points of view that Aidan mentioned earlier. You have different characters coming into it. You have a recreation of this this scenario, which this world. So he brings you into this world, this crofting world, and takes you there. And I think it's just a really really well written book and very deserving of the acclaim that it's receiving.
Yeah, and obviously we're really happy that it was number one in our Talking of Books Book of the Year, really. I'm just going to do a quick run over on our prize winners for today. So our first question was, is John Ronson coming to the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature in March 2017? And the answer, of course, is yes. And Paula, you have won a book from one of our LitFest authors. That'll be one of our office staff will be getting hold of you about that soon. Our second question is, what city is a strangeness in my mindset? And that city is Istanbul. And Makeri, I think it is, K. Makeri, you have won a LitFest author book. And our third question is, what literary prize did The Sellout recently win? And of course, the answer to that is the Man Booker Prize for 2016. And Gilbert, you will have a book coming your way. I'd just like to thank my co-host, James, for being with me, and Aidan for being with us throughout the show. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
And you will hear from us next in the new year. That's all from Talking of Books.
This is Talking of Books here on Dubai Eye 103.8.